April 2nd, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means streaming a soccer match on the rail beneath the craps table while you're in the middle of a game of craps. That's what I did last night, halfway paying attention to the dice table, halfway paying attention to the soccer match that was streaming, and did well on both. Las Vegas Lights came through for me and cashed out up from the craps game, so a nice night last night. Having a great time down here in Biloxi. The weather is so nice, the storm on my landing notwithstanding, but it's been fantastic. The gaming has been okay. I got my butt handed to me in a game of Baccarat, but got it all back later with soccer and craps and a little bit of other stuff. So it's been nice so far, but I won't get into the Biloxi trip too much, as we have another day here with the main group here, and next week's show will be a nice little review show on sort of what everybody experienced, which will be nice because unlike most community meetups where there is sort of an agenda throughout the weekend, what's been nice about this trip is there's been just sort of a place to meet later in the day for everybody. And then during the day, everybody just kind of does their own thing. And so it'll be interesting to see what everybody's experience has been, because for more than half the day, everybody's just sort of left to their own desires. And some people end up at different casinos, people end up at different games. And then everybody sort of convenes on a property later in the day and still, you know, kind of does their own thing. So it'll be nice to see what other people experience. Hopefully Mississippi Rob, Mark Duvall, and a few others can provide me their feedback and join me in a review show as we talk about what has happened in Biloxi. But I say this every time I visit Biloxi. This may be my favorite gambling destination that I can reach. You know, I've never been to Macau, but I can't imagine I would like it any much better than that I enjoy Biloxi. So love it down here. Gambling's great. Prices are great. Food is good. The people down here are fantastic. So hope if you've never made it down here, circle it on your map. Try to get it on your calendar, because it is worth the trip. Okay. This week's episode features Jeff Parles. He's a producer and a host for a couple of shows on VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Of course, I met him when he first started producing Gil's show, A Numbers Game, and I've worked with him in a number of ways, both in helping support Gil's endeavors, but also he was nice enough to do a talking head for the short video that I did featuring Gil. And I realized, you know, it's time to get Jeff on. It's time to talk to Jeff. I know he bets. I know he's around these amazing bettors. He's on a program, on several programs, where he's hearing some of the smartest in the business talk. So let's hear from Jeff Parles. So Jeff gives us the rundown on how he got to Vegas, how he got the VSiN, what he's learned since he's been there, and is it difficult to not constantly be gambling when you're in and around a casino all the time? All that and more from Jeff. Enjoy. Jeff Parles, producer of A Numbers Game, host of I should know the name of the show on VSiN that you host. I feel like an idiot now that I can't recall the name of the show that you host.
Tim, I'm out of here. It's all over. No, but the show's Bet Center, by the way. But
Bet Center.
Bet Center, Ben Wilson and I, at least for one more weekend, doing that show through the Final Four. But 9 o'clock Eastern time on Saturdays at night. So we'll at least the usual time. We'll be on at 6 this weekend, right in the middle of the Final Four.
Here's how incomplete I have in my notes here: producer of A Numbers Game and then host on VSiN. And
I go on with a usual hit with my guy John Jansen in Philadelphia. He's a radio host in Philadelphia. And every single time, making sure you don't feel bad about this, Tim. Every single time, Jansen will either get the show right or do exactly what you did and basically be like, "Oh, what? I forget which show you're on, because it feels like you're on too many," which is always a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
But, Tim, this is awesome to be with you today. I'm super excited to talk with you.
Thank you, Jeff. We have to start this conversation when we start all these interviews, and that is your first exposure to gambling. Not necessarily the first time you gambled, but can you even remember the first time you just like saw it, that you were around it?
I'm sure my dad will love this. The first real recollection of gambling was actually the Chris Moneymaker World Series of Poker. 2003 World Series of Poker. If you remember, that was the first year where everyone was like, oh my God, poker's really cool. Look at this ordinary guy winning the World Series of Poker. He beat Sam Farhas straight up or heads up in the final table. That was how I learned who Phil Hellmuth was. That was how I learned who Mike the Mouth was. And I really loved watching poker. Greg Raymer, the following year, of course, went with those ridiculous fossilized glasses or whatever it was. But that was really the first like gambling experiences or the way I experienced it. Of course, after that, you have to watch Rounders. You have to watch Casino. You have to watch all sorts of casino based movies. But really, that was the first experience that I had just familiarizing myself. And again, of course, when you're a kid, you're a younger kid and you're middle school and you're just playing poker for pennies with your middle school friends. That's really the biggest thing, Tim. But it was just the allure, for whatever reason, the allure of Vegas, because they were still playing it at Binion's at that point. In 2003, of course, now they're moving to the Strip for the first time this year with Paris and then the rebranded Bally's, which I believe they're calling the Horseshoe. But that really was the first experience just like seeing gambling, was the 2003 World Series of Poker and seeing Chris Moneymaker, who, now it's pretty funny in retrospect, where Moneymaker is one of the best poker players of the last 20 years. But seeing him win that World Series in 2003, that was really the first true recollection of any gambling things that I really, really would pay attention to. It was just watching it on ESPN. It just, when things happen to be on television, when you're a kid, Tim, they managed to stick with you, and that definitely stuck with me. I watched, would still to this day, will watch the World Poker Tour, the World Series of Poker. If I go out at the poker table, I just get crushed. So I just usually stay away from the poker table. But that's really the first memory there, Tim. It's the 2003 World Series of Poker and Moneymaker winning that gold bracelet.
It's crazy to think, you know, if that had happened in the modern era, I don't, like, it really wouldn't have made a blip on many people's radar, right? Like, think of, you know, we think like, oh, like poker's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal because it happened, like I said, it was on ESPN. We got to see it happen and it was noteworthy. There's hundreds of industries occurring right now that probably have a similar story going on, where an amateur or a perceived amateur has risen to the top that we have no idea, because we're just inundated with information, with entertainment, right? Like, this same story of Chris Moneymaker is probably happening in dozens of industries right now. We have no idea. Yeah. And if this hadn't happened, if this story had happened 10, 15 years later, poker would still be that thing that we do with our home game, with games with our friends, and the professionals in Vegas are the ones who go to the World Series, right? It would not be, the connection between the average gambler and poker would not be the same.
No, I 100% agree with you. It's actually funny. So I'm going to butcher this just on the relation of with my family. I believe it's my dad's cousin's husband. I think that's the correct relationship there. He played in the World Series of Poker a few times, and I'm sure he probably played in this year, and I didn't even realize. But one of the times on ESPN, he was at the main table that gets featured on ESPN, and Moneymaker, and the reason that he was that it was featured was because Moneymaker, it was a few years after Moneymaker had won. Moneymaker was at the table, and one other big professional was out there. I think it was Dan Harrington, but I'm not 100% sure, was at that table. But it was just so cool, and you're 100% right. Like, if that happened today, I think you're spot on. Like, it's just going to be seen as this, oh, this is a Sharks game, not a game where, oh, maybe, you know what, if I drove the however many miles up to Red Rock today and tried to get at the table, you know, maybe I could sit down, get good cards for 3-4 hours. Maybe I win a couple $100. But
yeah,
it really is, and you're 100% right. And it kind of is like this with the sports betting space right now too, where
Ooh, yeah.
it's we're still growing this space. It's still growing, and it's growing every single day with people that look, I like to think that I know what I'm talking about. I know I'm not the sharpest guy in the world, far from it. But I feel like I at least attempt to give out proper information better than a lot of people at this point that are out there that look, it's not people's fault that they're still learning the space while trying to give out picks and be experts. You know how it is, Tim. Let's just take our guy Gil, for example. Gil is one of the best tennis bettors that you and I know, anyone knows at this point.
Yep.
Gil has no in 3 days. It happens. Like, this is just really hard to do. And then people just come out of the woodwork and think, oh, the smart guy went 0-3. I can do better than that. So it really is just, again, like tying it all together, and it kind of goes back to the poker thing too. This stuff is really hard. All of it is really hard. And I don't think a lot of people, especially people that are trying to join the content game now, realize how difficult this truly is until you really get ingrained in it. I mean, look, I know we'll get to it, but I didn't know. I knew it was hard. I didn't realize how much work truly goes in until I moved out here in 2019. So it's 25 years old and I'm still not 30 yet. And let's face it, Tim, I still have a hell of a lot to learn at this point.
I have some years on you, and I can tell you when I was your age, I still thought, the 14 point teasers were something that, like, what? How could this lose? How could this lose?
How could anything lose?
Yeah. Did they just give you money after you do this? The 0-3, one of the most profound tweets that I ever read on how it made me think about sports betting was Rufus Peabody saying something to the effect of, like, I went 0-10 one day in my best year in the NFL. Right. And I thought it was and my biggest sport is soccer, especially the USL. I went 2-8 last weekend, and like, I'm still up like 9 units in 3 weeks so far on this. You know what I mean? Like it's and to your point on people just sort of like showing up and like they just start giving out picks the second they have a platform. It has made doing due diligence on who you're like looking into. I can't take anybody seriously until they're vouched for or until I know them personally, because all of a sudden people just start showing up and like they're just tweeting about picks, and like because they have a deal with FanDuel or whatever it may be, there's like some affiliation of professionalism. And while they may be professional content creator, they may even know what they're talking about. You have no idea if they're even betting these things.
Yeah. Look, I know we've kind of gone a direction already. That's already a lot into the weeds, but it's important.
Welcome to the better life, Jeff.
Hey, look, Tim, it's important though, because look, there are a lot of people out there that are very smart. There are a lot of people that are very smart, as we know. Gil, other VEASAN guys like Matt Heumann's very smart. Wes Reynolds, who we all know and love. Like, there are a lot of smart people out in this space. And it is, look, and it's kind of unfair for people that are very, that are, again, if, to me, you have to have at least 2 full years ingrained fully before you kind of really even know what you're even talking about. And that's probably still on the short end of this thing, because their guys are doing this 20, 30, 40 years who are still learning every day. Hell, I've been out in Vegas since 2019. I'm still not certain I know exactly what the hell I'm doing from time to time. So it's really difficult. And again, it's very hard to ask these people that are, like you said, they may not have a sports background. They may just be content creators who are really good on TikTok, who are really good making good videos that get views on Twitter. It's hard, and it's a lot to ask for. And I feel for some people that may not have the betting acumen at this point that are asked to say, oh, hey, we need a video that gets a lot of views. And if you lose, well, sorry, you lose and you get all the crap that you get from people on Twitter. And we know how people on Twitter are. If you lose one, you're an idiot.
Oh, man.
And it doesn't matter if you win. If you win, they're not going to thank you, because most of the people on Twitter just care about you giving out winners and expect you to win every bet, when it is the most unrealistic thing there is. But it is this industry right now, Tim, I think is at a really interesting point where some of the more informational stats-based people, because most of the time they're not the most entertaining people in the world, are in danger of being left behind for people that are not as sharp but have more entertainment value. And that is something that when you're picking out your content, you have to be really careful of what you pick out here. If you got someone you like, got someone you trust, someone that you know their process and they've been doing it for, heck, you know what, even if they've only been doing it for a year or 2 years, if they're on a good run and their handicapping you think is sound, especially when you listen to them on a podcast or they tweet out the logic for their picks or whatever social media platform, go with them. Tail them. If they lose, all right, so be it. You kind of, if you tail someone and they lose, it's like, well, you know what? Maybe I should start trying to do my own picks and trying to figure out what system works for me instead of tailing. It's just, it's a really interesting part right now, Tim, where we're at in the content in this space. And I think there's going to be a pretty solid line in the sand of, all right, this is going to go to people that may just only care about entertaining and betting is an entertainment vehicle for them versus people that are like, all right, I want to try to really make money from this thing.
By the way, Las Vegas Chris once told me the thing that he likes about my podcast is how free flowing it is and how it just goes where it needs to. And so I take that. And look, if Las Vegas Chris, if it's good enough for Las Vegas Chris, it's just good enough for most people, I think. So,
Tim, that's a man who is very sharp. That's a man you should listen to when he talks, Las Vegas Chris, for sure.
There are very few people, and I mean, this is not a slight against the people that I consume on a regular basis, but after, you know, Las Vegas Chris is one of these people that where like I feel like I get smarter, I learn something new every time I hear him talk, right?
Well, him and Adam just do a tremendous job. I mean, sure. the two of them are probably NFL betting wise, those two guys are probably the two sharpest guys in the entire world at this point betting the National Football League. But you're right. I mean, look, I love anytime Gil has Chris on, anytime that Gil has Adam on. I know it's a little bit harder with the time difference for Adam to hop on with us in the mornings, and I know he does hits with Mitch and Paulie right before us on VEASAN every once in a while, especially during the season. But it's a really good point. Like listening to people that you know that you are pretty certain are smart, and we know those two guys are really damn smart. You learn something every time they talk. Every time. Really do.
Okay, let's get back to talking to Jeff Parles about being a better. When did you start gambling? Like, in what form?
First gambling experience. Oh, my family's gonna love this. So my grandparents had a long time timeshare in St. Martin, Caribbean island, Dutch and French split island. I believe it's the Dutch side had legalized gambling. So if you were 18, you were good. So the first experience of like legitimate gambling for me was my grandmother giving me a $100 bill, sitting down at the blackjack table and playing blackjack in the Princess Casino in St. Martin. That's the first legitimate betting experience I had. Naturally, of course, I won money that night, and lo and behold,
it's all downhill from there.
Lo and behold, it's all over. Yeah. But in all seriousness, though, that was the first real betting experience that I had. Okay, you dabble with sports when you're in college and such. Not a lot. It just, you don't have a lot of money. You don't screw around with that. That's the one big advice if you're a college age and you're listening. You're like, oh, I want to bet sports. Just wait till you're 21. Wait till you have a reasonable income and just go ahead and get your limits right. The first sports betting experience in Vegas I had was the 2015 tournament. So I was 21, turning 22 a little bit later, I should say. And Tim, as you know, we only remember the bad beats. We never remember the good stuff from that trip. And I always remember the first true bad beat I ever really took on a game, especially out here. This was before it was legal everywhere, of course. Was Albany. The Great Danes of Albany were a 14 seed. They were playing Oklahoma. Okay. They're getting 6.5 points. Okay. They're down 8 with the ball with 40 seconds left. They come down to hit a 3 with under 10 seconds left. All right, great. We're going to win the bet. We're celebrating like crazy. All right, we took this ridiculous 14 seed getting points in the first half. We're going to win. Oklahoma's guard, what do you think happens? Oklahoma's guard. I forget who it was exactly because Oklahoma's had a lot of good guards through the years. Steamrolls right down the court, throws in like the floating hook shot, bank, buzzer beater, dunzo, lose it. Oklahoma's up 8, getting 6.5 in the first half. See you later. But you know what, though? That tournament, though, really, like, it got me hooked on at least the Vegas experience. The Vegas experience for the tournament, which was finally back. And then, of course, you come out here for NFL Sundays. You come out here for college football days. I love it all the way through. But really, again, the first betting experience, and I'm sure we'll go through this because I looking through your questions, I know this will come up again. Blackjack really was the first gambling experience, legit gambling experience that I've had. And that's one where, even to this day, even though I know it is an extraordinarily hard game to win at, as we know, there is a reason that that game exists in every casino on planet Earth. It is still one that it doesn't take much. It just takes knowing that little card and you're like, at least give yourself a chance. Of course, we know you have your 20 and your dealer finally finds a way to get the 6-card 21 and you want to get up and throw your drink in their face. But look, that's really where it all comes back to there, Tim. Blackjack more than anything for the in-person experience.
I mean, we all have our blackjack bad beat stories, but one that always sticks out in my mind, I was at MGM Grand. I was playing with a buddy of mine. This is back before I even really knew the smart way of betting around the casino, but I knew basic strategy and I got a 9 versus a dealer 6. So I doubled down. I get the ace that you want when you have that 9, right? To get that 20. And just like you said, he had that 6. He flipped over a 5 and I knew it. When I saw the 5, I was like, this mother. I just knew. And of course, here comes the 10 and I lose 21-20. But yeah, it's funny, right? Like I'm not sure I can even tell you a good story about how I like split and doubled down 4 times, but I remember this one hand where I got the good 20 and I still lost to a 21.
Look, Tim, there's good and bad, especially before I moved here. And look, to be honest, before I really moved here, the value of money was just an imaginary prospect more than anything for me before moving out here, Tim. I didn't truly grasp, oh yeah, it's probably not good to lose half a paycheck on a trip for whatever reason. I mean, just being young and stupid at that point before moving out here. And then you really see the people that you see, oh, I don't want to be like that. But yeah, no, you're 100% right. Because like there are times right before leaving the airport, and a few of my friends can attest this, I sit down at a $25 table at Paris with $100 about 30 minutes before my flight. And I legitimately won 20 out of 21 hands. Like it was an out of body experience where basically you're just pressing and everything's working and you get up $2,000 all of a sudden. It's like, wow, that's why we play this game. And then you get the times where you get splitting sixes against cards. You're supposed to split them is always the worst for me. You know what happens when you do that.
Yeah.
All right. I get a 6. You want a 4 or 5 to double? No, you'll get a king. 16. Yeah. Great. We got to stay. Next card. Oh, great. We got an 8. We got a 6. We got a 16 and a 14 against a dealer's 5. And then almost more times than not, you'll see, oh, crap, the dealer's got a 6 under there. All they got to do is pull a 7 and they beat me and they do what they need to. But it's funny, though, Tim, and just going back to this, it really is funny where we always remember the losses. We remember the big time wins.
Yeah.
But we never remember the. Oh, yeah, remember the time where we were consistent and we actually got out of there winning $200? Like, we never remember those good times where it's like, hey, we were profitable for that day, but we don't remember that.
So you mentioned Vegas trips and then ultimately moving out to Vegas where you are now. Yep. What ultimately got you to Vegas?
What ultimately got me to Vegas? So I went to college at University of Missouri. I graduated in 2015. After graduating, I got a job at local conglomerate stations, which happened to have the ESPN radio affiliate there. And one of my good friends who now is working in St. Louis had a really good job there and got me in. And I ended up taking his job when he left for St. Louis the first go around. But by the time that 2018 rolled around, I was like, you know what? I love Columbia, Missouri. Obviously, going to college there, you love where you go to college if you do the college experience right. And I was like, you know what? It's time. it's time. I'm 20. I'm going to be 25. It's time to get out of there. And I came to Vegas really realistically on figuring out a job that was going to be part-time at a different station out here, that really was slow to get going. And then it was like, we're a month in, we don't really have any leads. And then Matt Jones, who was the producer before me with Gil, leaves to go to a job in, I believe he went to Tampa at that point. And then lo and behold, all I know next is I'm producing a numbers game the week of the NCAA tournament in 2019, first day. So it's like, that's really how I got out here. And I wanted to change. Like, I always loved coming here as a tourist. It's always fun, the glitz and the glamour and all that stuff. And I thought it would be a fun place to at least do for a few years. But look, I love living out here, man. I love living out here. The biggest thing is staying disciplined. But if you stay disciplined, it's a great place to live. It really is. So I'm really happy I made the move in 2019 out here. And I'm very happy to still be here through a pandemic and all.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned being disciplined, and maybe you can answer two questions with this answer. And do you play other casino games still? And if you do, do you find that discipline to actually be difficult, or is the casino just a part of life so much now where it's easy to be passive about it?
Yeah, I would lean towards the second thing there, Tim, because I will say this, working in a casino every day definitely helps, because you've been to the South Point plenty of times. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been to the South Point plenty of times. It's a local casino that's very smoky.
Yeah.
And we're in a glass case, so we don't get the smoke in there. I have our office downstairs. There's no smoking downstairs also. So it's like, okay, I don't really get the true casino experience when I'm going to work, but I see the lights. I hear the slot machines. I walk by the tables to get to our office. Like, it's one of those where the temptation is always there.
Yeah.
But in the end, more than anything, I think working in the casino really helps me, because most of the time after I'm done with work, like, yeah, sometimes every once in a while, I'll drive down Las Vegas Boulevard towards Henderson, go to the M. I know you love the M, Tim.
Yes, so I do.
Go play at the M because it's cheaper tables. But that's very rare. It's very rare. Look, I'll play blackjack still. I know it's a terrible game.
If you know basic strategy, it's a pretty good game.
Yeah, no, look. Even the basic strategy fails you a good amount of times, Tim.
Yeah.
I played poker for a little bit when I moved out here. That kind of went by the wayside with the pandemic. At some point, if I'm going to play, like, I would like to shift the blackjack out and shift the poker in. Again, you can sit there for hours and kind of mitigate what you're doing, especially, again, if you're getting crappy cards, what are you going to do? Change tables, go from there. But really, more than anything, it's more times than not, I'm pretty disciplined when playing the casino in the casino. I hate playing slot machines, so that's never a problem. Never. I get why like people who come in on vacation will sit at a slot machine, because you can, if you do it right, you get your two free drinks and you lose $20. So be it. But it bores me. It just bores the hell out of me. Pressing a button. Who cares? All right, fine. Doesn't take any skill here.
There are a couple slot machines that I will play when it's good to play them, and I'm bored as ever playing them too. Even when I know even when I believe I'm getting the best of it, I'm bored. Like the first like 20 minutes, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm doing this play. I had a play once that took me 4 hours to hit. Jeff, I was so bored. Like it hits.
How did you not fall asleep?
I don't know. And here's the thing. It hits. I'm more relieved than I am excited that the jackpot hit, right? Like, I was like, oh, thank goodness. This is done. I can go do something else.
Get the hell out of there.
Yeah. I just made $2,000, but let me get out of here, please.
Yeah. Look, again, that's one thing. Like, if I like playing slots, I think it would be a lot harder, because that's just so easy. And there's obviously a lot more slots than tables in these casinos. But yeah, look, blackjack is the one vice that, again, obviously I'm betting sports every day, but that's because we're in it. We're in that lifestyle, working for Visa. And if you're really pot committed, you gotta bet every single day. You just know your limits. But Blackjack's the one vice that if there's any game that could get me in trouble, that would be the one probably, Tim.
Yeah, so let's. So that's a good transition to the other side of this. So you're not into slot machines, easy to walk right by them. Blackjack's fun to play, but you at least like you can at least get yourself out of the South Point. You make the conscious decision, okay, I'm going to go to M. You help produce one of the better sports betting programs there are right now. You host your own sports betting show. You're employed by a sports betting company, and there's a counter that'll take just about any bet they post about 100 feet away from you. How difficult is that to, because when I listen to a numbers game, I have to have 20 tabs open of every out that I have access to just in case Jason Weingarten gets on there and says that he likes, because if it's good enough for Jason, it's good enough for me, right? It's like, that's right. My theory. So if Jason could be like, I like people think I'm weird betting obscure soccer. If Jason Weingarten's like, look, I know this like little league soccer, a little league, softball team that there's lines posted. You're going to want the north side versus the, like, I'd bet it. If it was good enough for Jason, it's good enough for me. But I don't get to listen every day. You get to sit in every one of those conversations. You get to hear everything that's produced, or at least something that you're in there. Is it difficult to not chase every play that gets mentioned on his programs?
You know what? It's not as difficult as you would think, Tim, because you have to at least, and look, by the way, I'm happy you bring up Jason, who is by far the most phenomenal, interesting man in the world at this point. Just fascinating human being, very smart guy. Again, there's plenty of smart people in this space, but Jason, now that we get to see him every day on the Skype, it's just it's so different than just hearing him on the phone. But now look, like part of this works against us here in Nevada. It also works for us because I really do stay onshore. I really never go to global numbers unless if it's just something that is just so ridiculously mispriced and not available here.
Yeah.
Very rare that I would ever go global. But look, it is, we do have the advantage of that, where the Nevada books are stuck in 2006. And all these new books, I think I'd actually have a bigger problem if I lived in Pennsylvania. I really do, because everything's available in the newer jurisdictions. And hey, look, the DraftKings, the FanDuels, the MGM and Caesars outside of Nevada, they're very different. They're everything. Like, so when Jason was talking about Caribbean Series baseball during the winter, I couldn't bet that out here. But if you were in Pennsylvania or New Jersey or Michigan or wherever, you can bet that. So that actually kind of works to my advantage. If I was in a newer jurisdiction, I think I would probably play a little bit more. But look, there's some things where, like, let's say betting golf, for example, because we have great golf people at Beeson, Brady Cannon, Wes Reynolds, Humans, even Jason dabbling in golf, Matt Brown as well, Gil's co-host on Primetime Action. That's one of those where you just have to be careful because you're looking at a list of like, oh, wait a second. All right, so we got 8 different people with 20 different golfers.
Yeah.
If I'm betting 20 different golfers, I'm taking a giant slice of my profit out.
Yep.
And again, we know how needle and haystack that is. Who knows if even one of those 20 is going to get home? So, yeah, look, there are some things where it's like, oh, my goodness, I got to bet this. Like, Gil's tennis picks. Like, I know Gil's picks before they go on the air. Like, I'll play them before they go on the air.
As you should.
Just the way that, like, I know I'm getting the best of the number before it goes on the air. I know how he moves markets. So, but really, really, Tim, it's just it's picking your spots with those guest plays. There are some that it's like, whoa, wait a second here. That number at book A is 100-1. At book B, it's 30-1. Book C, it's 40-1. Yeah, maybe we take a small piece of that 100 because someone's giving it out at 80 and we're getting 100. That would be those would be the times really more than anything that I would hop in. And also too, betting on my phone and having a certain amount of money where I out here, I have to walk into the casino and reboot my accounts by giving the cashier money. That gives you motivation to not blow money on senseless stuff.
Yeah. Look, if I actually wouldn't hate that extra layer of protection, if it was accessible to do that, right? I'm in Virginia.
Correct.
Almost like the UK model, where it's not a big sports book in the casino, where like so there's a little shop next to the 7-Eleven. If I had to go in there to fund my account, like I actually wouldn't hate that level of protection as well. Because let me tell you, it is easy to be like, oh snap, that line is way off, or that line's juicy, I guess maybe. Let me connect the PayPal real quick and put
Right.
another hundo in here so I can take advantage of it, right? And before you know it, you've done that 5 times in a night because you just listened to Jason Weingarten segment on a numbers game. And yeah, dude, let me tell you, between him and then when Gil Drew and Dan Weston are talking tennis, I'm trying to think. Oh, Paul Carr, when he talks soccer, I usually snag a play out of that too. So yeah, the a week long on it's 10 hours of programming, and there's a play to make, I think, almost in every hour. So let's talk about so something that a numbers games is good at that other programs aren't as good at is emphasizing price over pick. Right, the idea like today, Gil gave out Daniel freaking Collins, and
Easy winner.
easy winner. He then gave out, I can't remember, he gave out two other, so he gave out that one. The number available was better than when he got, so it was a good play. He gave out two others. One of them was way off of what he got, and he like really cautioned, like, this isn't a good price anymore. But you know, people bet it simply because it was the pick, right? Like,
Right.
and I'm curious, as like, now that you're in this, what is your perspective on that? How much do you see this disconnect between provider who's saying, this is what I played at this price, and the audience who is likely to just bet it because so and so said this is the side, or this is, I mean, imagine how many people probably follow Jason's futures at a $40 difference, right? Because, yeah.
Yeah,
Anyways, take that however you want.
Tim, it's a very interesting dance, because you have to keep in mind here when you're doing these shows, even though a numbers game is like betting calculus. It just is. It's just like, it's equivalent to the calculus, your AP calc class in high school. It's a little more of a higher level. At least again, how many other than Drew and Weston, how many people are, and Pamela Maldonado as well, other than those few people, how many people are actually even giving out consistent tennis picks other than Gil?
Yeah.
Not very many. So it's a little bit tougher there too. And also too, like, if you have someone who's just starting to listen, and they're like, you know what? I'm listening to VSiN most of the day now because I want to learn how this space operates. And it's sometimes hard to make sure, like, especially for people that are new to the space, trying to explain, like, hey, so I bet Amir Kecmanovic is one of the guys. Somehow I actually know how to pronounce his name. The only reason I know that is because of Gil. But Kecmanovic was someone who I think Gil gave out at -106, and it went up to -120. And Gil basically is like, hey, you can't play this anything more than -120. -120 is the best, the worst price you can lay here. You don't want to be laying -125, -130. And I think VSiN as a whole does a pretty good job at this, more times than not, of making sure that people understand when to not lay a money line, when to take points instead of taking a plus money line. It's funny you bring up the futures, because we got an email because Gil got an absurd number on Fernando Tatis Jr. after the wrist break announcement came. Gil got like 300 to one. Him and Jason
Yeah.
got it. And we got an email basically asking, where did we get that number? And because it was like, oh, all the way down 11 to one. I was like, look, I think especially when you're dealing with newer bettors, you have to be willing to see those questions every once in a while. It's like, okay, this is someone who's clearly newer to the space and didn't realize, okay, that 300 to one was probably gone in 5 minutes. Knowing how Jason bets, I would imagine as soon as Jason made the bet, that thing went right to 100-1.
Yeah.
And then people kept hitting it down and down and down and down. And it is a dance. It's a little bit of a dance of playing to the audience of the newer people who are trying to really learn how to get in this space and people that really are well ingrained and have been in it for years. So I think it really is one thing that Gil does very well. Important to bring out, like, yeah, I got the better of the number here, but you have to be careful. You don't want to be laying -150 on a guy that I got in even money, because the value at even money, great. That's really good. -150, not so much. Granted, someone could lay to -150, and I don't know how Kekmanovic is doing. I think he's playing right now. Could get there, even at a really bad number. Again, bad numbers win a lot of the time, Tim, you know that, and good numbers lose. Yeah. So closing line value, even though it's important, from time to time, a lot of closing line value won't even buy you a sandwich at the end of the day.
When did you realize, was it, I don't know if you had this experience before you got the VSiN, if it was while you're VSiN, but like, when did you realize you were turning the corner on becoming a good sports bettor?
Can I say I still am?
No, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. I mean,
here's the thing, Tim. I don't consider myself a sharp. I'm not at that level. I'm not at the level of Gil. I'm not at the level of humans. I'm not at the level of Reynolds. I'm not at the level of, I'll never be at the level of a Las Vegas Chris. But I think the big thing here is you just have to be honest with yourself. And one thing that happened this year, because I love betting college basketball, Tim. Okay? So the games start, obviously, in November. I started out in November. I'm pretty sure I started the year 1-13 on college basketball bets this year. It was a disaster. So I was like, all right, you know what? We still have college football bowl games. We have NFL games. We have plenty of stuff to go through. We are just going to leave this out. And we are just not going to bother about college basketball until we get more data points. If I was a little less experienced in this, I would have kept drilling my head against the wall. And God knows how bad that stretch would have been. Lo and behold, I ended up this year for college basketball, which is a pretty nice accomplishment considering where I was at the beginning of the year. So, look, I think that's really like you're always improving. You always have to improve. You always have to figure out what's working, what's not, what's your process like, what works in your process, what doesn't work in your process. And I think from where I was when I got the visa in 2019 and to where I am now here at the end of March in 2022, I'm a significantly better than I was then. I still have a long way to go, but I at least now can identify quote unquote spot stuff better. I can identify what in my process works, what in my process doesn't. And if something is not working, basically saying, you know what, we can't bet this for 2-3 days. We got to figure out what's actually gone wrong here and then come back, even if it takes 2-3 weeks. Even I think that's the biggest thing, at least for me, where I'm, again, still a long way to go, but I've at least grown in that respect.
So take that 1-13 stretch, right? Isn't it interesting how where you are in the season will that 1-13 will feel differently, like depending on where you are. So starting off 1-13, it has this feeling of, oh my goodness, what am I doing wrong? Right? Like what am I missing? If it's in the middle of the season, it's this feeling of like, oh, well, this is just a tough stretch. It happens, negative variance. And then if it's towards the end of the season, there's that panic of like, oh my God, am I losing my edge? Right? Like, is the market adjusting to how it could be the same set of games, same set of variants, but where it is in the season will change the panic that you have in such a short stretch.
Yeah. Look, it's just one of those where I had to get out. Like, they're just one of those. You, Tim, we've all been through this. You mentioned it earlier where you're pretty good on the second division soccer.
That's
here,
right,
in the U.S., where I'm sure that most people couldn't even name one team name in the USL. The only reason I know the Las Vegas Lights is because they advertise like hell here.
Yeah.
But
By the way, I hit the Las Vegas Lights as a 7-1 underdog last week.
They won back to back games as ridiculous right. underdogs. If I'm correct, but
that's correct.
Look, Tim, I think it's just knowing when something is not working and trying to reevaluate it and not just drilling your head against the wall and not panicking and changing the, it was just small tweaks too. It wasn't even like, I didn't have to throw the whole thing in the trash. I just had to tweak it slightly and it worked to as good of a college basketball season as I could have hoped for.
So you've touched on a number of things that inform this question already, but is there any other way for you to answer the question, how has VEASAN impacted you as a bettor?
Definitely helped. Definitely helped. That's for sure. Oh, look, I think just being around the space every day is what's important. That's really the biggest thing. And when you're around the space every day, you just pick up small, even small intricacies are important to be picked up. So that's really the biggest thing. I think definitely I'm definitely much smarter than I was before I got there in 2019. I was a total young dummy at that point. Now I'm just a slightly older dummy with a little bit more knowledge. But look, it really has helped just understanding, even just, like I said, just small entry, small little things will make you, even if you're still struggling, even if you're hovering around 50%, guess what? A few little tweaks here and there, you can at least slightly go up a little bit every once in a while. And again, look, Tim, I think the biggest thing too, that being around every day, this thing is so freaking hard to do well. Yeah. And it just has made me appreciate the guys who have been doing it for years and years and years who are consistent winners, because this thing is hard as hell. If you are a consistent winner, you got the secret sauce, you're doing something right.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, you are out in Las Vegas, Nevada, which is one of our favorite places in the world as gamblers. As someone who's been there for a few years now, I have a handful of questions, and I apologize for not prompting you with these questions. But as we round out our conversation here, I realize we got to ask a Vegas person some Vegas stuff. What is all around your favorite property in Las Vegas?
Favorite property in Las Vegas. All right.
Now for any reason.
Now we get to have some fun and we get this. Someone will call me an elitist here right out of the gate. Because to me, my favorite property, even though it is getting harder and harder to not get priced out, the best property in Vegas to me is still the Wynn Encore.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're in a different level of sophistication, a different level of just, holy crap, this place is amazingly nice. It is unbelievably nice. Now, it's hard to get tables under $50 there now, which is really difficult. But from just a property perspective, the restaurants that are all, again, I understand pricey, but all the restaurants are in there are good. I love Mizumi. I love Lakeside. I love Sinatra on the Encore side. SW, I have thoughts on, but I'll save them for a different time. But there are so many great things in that property that I love. Just to tie it though back here, betting wise, because it's really hard to gamble at a lot of these strip properties now. The place that I actually really like is up in Summerlin. I love the Rampart because it's a slower pace. You're always going to have your $10 tables if you want to play. Customer service there is as good as it is anywhere in the entire valley. And look, it's sometimes good to just play with the locals, at least if you're living here. It's kind of what you want to do. So I really like the Rampart for just regular betting experiences for if you want to play cheaper. And it's very different than everything. It's very different than a lot of places out here, Tim. I know you've been up there, but it's very different than a lot of places. But for like just regular, hey, I want to sit down and not get crushed and play $10 to $15 tables for 2 hours. That's usually, if I'm going to do that, I would go there. Or I'd go next door to the Sun Coast. But there's a little less smoke at the Rampart these days than the Sun Coast.
Your point about the Wynn is spot on. I have, you know, when you play table games as much as I have, you've seen the wide range of the the spectrum of quality of drinks delivered to you is so wide. You could be somewhere like downtown El Cortez or Plaza, and the nicest cocktail you're gonna get is a well drink, right? And then at Wynn and Encore, I mean, I've played there and I've had one of the best old fashions I've ever had delivered to me at a table, right? So, and like asking for an old fashioned, if you ask for an old fashioned at another casino, they're just going to put some whiskey in with some sugar, drop a maraschino cherry in there and call it like, there's your old fashioned, buddy. Like it's not. So, I'm with you on Wynn Encore for sure. Circa notwithstanding, because we all know Circa is the holy grail sports betting at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to if you wanted to go to a sports book to watch a game and like you're just like, I don't feel like dealing with the crowd at Circa, or like, I know I'm not going to get a seat, like, where would you go?
Whew. So here's the deal. Because it's hard to get seats in a lot of these good spots now. You really got to get there early. Look, the Westgate still is for watching games, and honestly, their betting menu is still really damn good. The Westgate is still up there.
Yeah,
it really is at this point. It's still Circa and Superbook are still the holy grails of watching games. The pool at Sahara, where I'm blanking on the name of it, that's actually not a bad spot also, because Stadium Swim's amazing. There's no arguing that. It's actually a little bit easier to get into the new pool at Sahara, which is really good if you want an outdoor experience. But then, look, again, I'll go back to a place that I frequented before I lived here, and I still watched a few tournament games down there this year, the Venetian. I love the Venetian book. The problem is it's hard to get sitting for major events because you really got to be a primo player in order to get guaranteed seating at the Venetian. But if you're going there like a – baseball season starting, if you just want to chill there on a Saturday and watch baseball for 6 hours, no one's going to bother you. Yeah. You'll be able to get a chair and be very happy. You have that really good Chinese restaurant that has the view into the screens as well. So those are my top three for just flat out watching games. Again, I like the Rampart too, but again, that's another slower paced one, but they have a good screen. And Tim, I'll tell you this, I got to give a shout out to my guy, Dwayne Colucci, who's the Racing Sportsbook director up there at the Rampart. Because during football season, I watched all my football there this year because they stowed me away with all the horse race players. And and there's nothing like being on the horse racing side during an NFL Sunday where you get your own television and I can, all right, cool. If one game I can't really see, I'm just going to throw it right there. But that's probably, again, for me, a me specific one more than anything. I'm sure if there are people coming in, if they're staying on the strip, the Venetian's an easy one to get to. And Circa and Westgate are very short Uber drives from basically anywhere on the strip too. So those are the ones I love, Tim.
So you mentioned family. I just realized I skipped over this question on my list here before getting to the easy one. So I'm going to hold you to this one, making sure we get a response out of you here. You mentioned your family and a number of stories here. How did your family feel when you decided I'm going to move to Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm going to work for a company that is focused on sports betting?
They were very supportive. They've always been supportive of what I've tried to do. And I'm still a professional broadcaster first, more than anything. If it happened to be working for a regular sports radio station out here would come with an offer before Veasan, I would have worked there.
Yeah.
But Veasan was the one where the offer came in and it was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. Cause look, as soon as this network was created, it was always like thinking, oh, cool, that would be a great place to work one day. And I was there by 25 years old. It was a hell of an accomplishment for me to get there by 25. And my parents were supportive. They were supportive of the move. I think probably where it's like, oh, you're a month in and you still don't have the job set up fully. That's a little bit alarming. But other than that, my parents love coming to visit here. My parents have always been supportive. I love them for hundreds of reasons, but that's one of the biggest ones. And they're all supportive. Everyone in the family supportive. Look, Tim, you know, this is a great place for people that people that you haven't talked to say, "Hey, what? I know you live in Vegas now. What can you do for me?" Which is usually like, "Hey, I can offer you a smaller bed in my guest bedroom, but not much else more than that." But for my parents and my family, it's like, "Oh, it's great. I know that people are going to. Most of my family is going to come visit me at most times, every 6 months." And now that we're starting to looser pandemic restrictions, a little less COVID out there, the family out here basically every 3 months, and it's almost not quite like living near them at home, but it's still pretty damn good.
Yeah. Okay. Last question to add towards the top of the show. You mentioned movies like Casino, Rounders, etc. What is your favorite gambling movie?
Oh, it's still Rounders.
It's got to be Rounders, right?
It's still Rounders. That is still my favorite. Even though I will say now that like actually knowing blackjack, the Hangover scene where Galifianakis's character is just counting cards and winning thousands of dollars in like 2 hours is really, that's always one of the, just like the sheer absurdity of that always will stand out to me. But it's still Rounders. Rounders is still, for casino movies, it's really hard to beat that. And again, Malkovich's character in that is just so good. Yeah. He's so good in that movie.
How many times has everybody who's seen that movie at one point has quoted, pay that man his money.
Pay that man his money.
Yeah, everybody has.
But you know, it's just, hey, look, that's how you learn about tells, right? Just make sure you don't have Oreos in front of you.
Yeah, right. But if you watch James Bond, you'd have learned the hard way that a bleeding eye doesn't necessarily mean that he's bluffing. Yeah, all right. Jeff Parles, producer of A Numbers Game, host of Bet Center on VSiN. Now that I have that adequately in my notes for the wrap up here, Jeff, this has been an absolute pleasure, man. Thank you for hanging out with me, and I look forward to seeing you in Vegas again soon.
Tim, it's awesome to be on this pod. This was a blast, and we're looking forward for you being back out here. And also too, I got to say this, the short you did on Gil, What a job.
Thank
what
you,
a
man.
Job.
Thank you.
It was a really, really good thing. I loved it. I know Gil loved it. People around here appreciated that. And you did a great job on that, Tim. I had to say that before I left.
VSiN, South Points, the D, everybody was really gracious letting me work in and around to get that short done. Hoping to do something else story-wise with another better. I got to find the right story. Believe it or not, Jeff, getting video over someone's shoulder of them looking at a Don Best screen isn't all that engaging. So it's difficult to storytell in this space, but I am interested, and I hope to do another clip like that with someone else this year.
Oh, Tim, I'll be looking forward to it, because again, look, we I think everyone who watches the show knows how much I love Gil, and there is not a person that I would not have, there's no one else on this planet that better than Gil that I could have learned this space from. So,
sure.
But by knowing Gil, I've met all these great people, including you, Tim. So that's right. That's I think a perfect way to wrap this up. A compliment for our host today.
Thank you.
You got it, Tim.
I'll keep the post-interview monologue short here, as I really don't have anything to update, and my mind is, I'm not as organized as I normally am on this stuff, because I'm recording this from my room in Beau Rivage in Biloxi. By the way, I can oversee the Gulf. It's just amazing down here. But snapshot updates. No updates on Pittsburgh. Let me know if you think you're gonna swing by. I'm doing the Rivers Casino on the 14th. I'll be heading to a soccer match that evening, and then Meadows Casino on the 15th. That's the plan. Vegas vacation. I have not booked a room yet. I don't know where I'm staying. I will likely have a spot downtown, and I'll likely have a spot on the Strip. But I will be there, and I'll be there not only for the family meet and greet that everybody can join on, I believe, that Monday evening, but I've also got my spot at the cocktail event that Tony and Karen are putting on, so I'll be there as well. And then, oh man, that's it. That's those are the only gambling trips I have set up. But there's an update on those two things. Bettermerch.com is where you can cop some merchandise, support the show, tip your dealer's shirt. I see a handful of you coming through and getting those. Thank you so much for both supporting the show and helping spread the message that we should tip and support our dealers. Let me tell you, down here in Biloxi, it's not a difficult thing to do. Everybody's, all the dealers and all the crews we've had so far have been just absolutely amazing. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge, weekly bonus audio, and an ambassador level where once a quarter you can pick a piece of merchandise from the store. Ambassadors should have a message from me right now, sort of explaining how to choose that piece of merchandise. I see a handful of you have gone back to me. I'll start shipping those out when I get back from Biloxi next week. And I think that's it. Better viewing is pending. Well, I should say Mark and I recorded one. You probably saw that on YouTube, youtube.com/TheBetterLife. I just need to trim that a little bit, and then I'll put that in the feed for that show. That it's got its own feed. You can find it in your podcaster of choice. I think I'm still waiting on Spotify. But BETTOR, Better Viewing is the show. That'll do it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you. If you're down here in Biloxi and you're listening to this either while you're getting ready in the morning or you're leaving Biloxi, I can tell you I had a fantastic time with you. More on what happened down here in Biloxi and the handful of stories we may have coming up on the next show. I'm Timothy Lawson. Forgot how to sign out my own show. I'm like itching to get back down to the casino. On behalf of Jeff Barles, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.